So next we have a member of Ultra Red. So I'll say a few things about Ultra Red and then introduce Don't Rhyme. Ultra Red is a sound art collective founded in 1994 by two Los Angeles-based AIDS activists. The collective's current 12 members work as organizers and educators with community-based organizations and social justice movements in Germany, the UK, and the US. Don't Rhyme co-founded the collective in 1994. As an AIDS activist since 1989, he has been involved in ACT UP Los Angeles and Clean Needles Now, recently renamed the LA Community Health Project. He has lectured extensively in the US and Europe and teaches at the Vermont College of Fine Arts. He completed his MFA at UCLA in 2006, and he has won numerous artist and research fellowships. He's currently a fellow with the Social Practice Art Research Center at UC Santa Cruz. And please join me in welcoming Don't Rhyme.
Hi. Also, like everyone, I want to thank the folks for convening these 2 days and for asking Ultra Red to make a modest contribution to the discussion here. So thank you for that. Also, want to thank the invitation to ask our collective to reflect on the word militancy. A few weeks ago, the 12 of us, 12 members of Ultra Red, 4 of us in Los Angeles, 2 in New York, and 3 in Germany and 3 in the UK, we had an opportunity to meet together, the 12 of us, in Cologne, Germany. It's the first time we ever sat in a room together after 20 years. Some of us have been working together. So what I'm going to share with you today is really a jumble, a kind of soup, that will reflect in a way my destabilization of that caused by that discussion. The notes that I'll share with you, very preliminary, have multiple voices in them. So I'm standing here with you, but the words that I'll be sharing with you actually are not entirely my own, but are also members of Ultra Red, as well as a few members of School of Echoes, which is the popular education and organizing mentorship program that we have in Los Angeles. And I'm super grateful for those folks for contributing to our thoughts on militancy. Real quick mention of how I want to organize the presentation. I don't have images. You know, Ultra Red's really bad at taking pictures, so but I have audio, so I'm going to play a series of sound recordings, or what we would call sound objects, and this helps me to calm down because I get really nervous. After each recording, I'm just going to let us sit with the echoes of what's been played for about 15 seconds. Feel free to take notes on what you've heard. This way we have two parallel texts running at all times. The selection that I've chosen for today help provide you with a context for my own political trajectory. In the spirit of that, I just want to dedicate today's presentation to two events. One is November 1989, the assassination of 6 philosophers of liberation in El Salvador, their housekeeper and her daughter. And then 3 weeks ago, the passing of Tony. And you'll meet Tony in a little bit. So, sound object number one.
Healthcare is right, not frivolous, because that goes right to the heart of what we're talking about here. That the healthcare system in this country has not worked equally.
I'm not an AIDS victim. I'm not an AIDS sufferer. I'm not an AIDS
I begin by recalling the importance of focusing on militancy, not as an idea, but as a practice. Oops. I'm hesitant to use the word praxis, although in the context of revolutionary liberation movements, militancy and praxis have long been heard as synonyms. Yet I'm aware that in a landscape where such a history has greatly receded, praxis has lost its militant connotations. More commonly, praxis gets defined as putting theory into practice. Theory is prior and primacy. We think and then we act. I can understand why, as intellectuals, we would find this definition of praxis appealing. The primacy of theory affirms our class position as ideological patrons, to use an old expression from Walter Benjamin. I'm reminded of the point of Audre Lorde's essay, or one of the points of Audre Lorde's essay, Poetry is Not a Luxury. Ideas are not necessarily extraordinary on their own. What is important, Lorde insists, is experience. Militancy grows out of and into experience. Contrary to the ideological patron, the militant acts her way into thinking. We often hear militants describe a visceral response to injustice, an affective sense that nothing less than resistance is tolerable. Perhaps this is why militancy has also been described as a manifestation of love. To speak of militancy is to reflect on an experience of that visceral embodied response to oppression, a response whose muscle is love.
Discussion with me, maybe you should move him a few feet away.
No, you know, we have 50 people around here. So
good, yeah. Who knows what the fuck we'd be doing if they weren't here? Yes. I'm a little agitated, excuse me. This is the fourth week this has been going on. All right, so I'm like, I'm losing my patience here. We have a right to do this program.
No, you don't have a right
yes,
to do this
do.
Program. You're violating the law.
So what? For 2 years we violated the law and it wasn't an issue.
Well,
so why is it an issue now?
It's an issue now. You are violating the law.
In a post-Patriot Act, United States, we cannot encounter the word militancy without also hearing the word extremism. Although if I think back to my years in the militant AIDS activist movement of ACT UP, we were often accused of extremism, even by other folks involved in AIDS activism. The difference today is that militants have become the enemy combatant of the state. Militancy is synonymous with extremism, and extremists haunt our mediascape with a daily body count. We know who the enemies of liberalism are by whom we have deemed as militants. In the United States, Islamic fascists are called militants in order to make legible their extremism. But Christian fascists are called right-wing, Tea Party, conservatives. Christian fascists are rarely called militants, even when their armed militias blow up women's health clinics, murder queers and people of color, or brandish guns to intimidate federal law enforcement. Likewise, they are not called militants when they draw on billions of corporate dollars to take over the government and pass laws that mandate the state control of women's bodies, protect the sacred interests of capital, and constrain any attempts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, or when they suppress voter rights. The term militant designates the enemies of a prevailing liberal and increasingly hegemonic Christian fascist ideology. It feels so good to say that. Fuck. The term militant enshrines the liberal center as well as differentiates various strands of authoritarian tendencies, the bad Islamist versus the benign Christian dominionist. But why is it so difficult for anti-capitalist, anti-racist, and those who oppose gender violence to practice militancy, let alone claim the term as our own? We can talk about the prevailing sense of conflict avoidance that infects nearly all political discourse, except when it is right of center. We can attribute aversion to the word to its wholesale appropriation by the liberal establishment. However, we also can't ignore the history of 40 years ago when militancy marked a particular tendency, by no means a dominant tendency, to see armed violence as the preferred tactic for catalyzing a people's revolution. Revolutionary cells who employed armed resistance often did so claiming solidarity with the nationalist liberation movements of the global South. And yet, as much as they hoped their actions to spark a popular insurrection, these same groups were often largely and profoundly alienated from the classes they hoped they would be who would be able to read their actions as writing on the wall. This alienation marks the sharp difference between such revolutionary movements in the global north and much of the revolutionary tendencies that inspired them from the global south. Here we can begin to trace not only the historical roots of a contemporary ambivalence about militancy, but also its structural and organizational roots. What lesson do activists learn from that episode of vanguardism?
And then you also want to make sure that you don't inject in the same spot. See how that did wear out?
Yeah.
And there's another one in here that helps too. A lot of people get the angle wrong. Some people want to go all the way through. Mm-hmm. You want to come at an angle so you're in.
Oh, okay.
And there's a bevel on the needle.
Uh-huh.
It's like a slice.
A hole.
Yeah, where the hole is, you want to face that up. Because if you turn the bevel around, it'll hit the bottom and it seals it up and it seems like you don't have a vein.
Gotcha. This is the way I usually try to go, like that.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah,
I never try.
almost rest when I used to shoot up. When I used to shoot up, I used to almost rest the needle on me, and then just lift and then kink. Because I used to do the same thing, just like this, that old holding. And what ends up happening is you go through it, and the more this way you go, the more traveling you have this way, as opposed to a fourth of an inch this way.
Okay, I got you.
You know, always use a tile. The more travel you have, like, see, see, this is like, I don't know, I'm guessing, you know, an inch, and this is only a half an inch if you're going this way, you know.
Okay, I got you. All right. Thank you. But, yeah, tie off. Pump your mango off, dude. Yeah, all right.
We want to be careful in recounting the history of left-wing armed revolutionary groups in the global north, that we do not underplay or minimize the reality of violence in the everyday life experience of poverty, racism, gender oppression, police violence, and generalized monopoly finance capitalism. While some may object to the word militancy because it hearkens to the language of war, the simple fact is we are already at war. Those who stand in some proximity with the poor can hear, see, and touch the consequences of the war on the poor. The measure of one's privilege is one's distance from the collateral damage of that war. Here it is important to note that among the NSA documents released by Edward Snowden were detailed accounts of the U.S. federal government's assessment of the threat of mass uprisings due to two specific crises in capitalism. Number one, climate disaster. And number two, extreme wealth disparity. In other words, the state fears a militancy that will arise in reaction to the ravages of capital. To insist on the center, to censor conflict, and to feel more discomfort with antagonism than with oppression are all extensions of the work of the surveillance state. Meanwhile, monopoly finance capital nurtures a world of permanent stagnation, exponential overaccumulation of wealth, the steady degradation of labor, of which the proletarianization of higher education is but one example, and a widening metabolic rift with our material conditions on this planet.
There's been like two or three times that like the Hollywood Reporter found out that the needle exchange was operating, and then like all of a sudden there were like all these, you know, huge social issues that were because of militant. Well, I mean, they were there before us, they were there after us, like, we didn't bring them, we didn't cause, like, whatever they don't like, but as soon as they find out you're there, you're responsible for, like,
every
social ill.
You know what I've learned? I don't know what it is, but I've been in courts with possession, sales, or whatever, and I had a $20 possession, of heroin, and the dude next to me had 5 ounces of cocaine. And I swear to God, I got 6 years for it.
Yeah.
And he got out.
They want to keep him going.
It's just a taboo. It's just people, they hear the needle thing, and they're just, I don't know what it is, they think that's the worst thing you can do.
Ten years ago, the members of UltraRed underwent a shift in our sound practice from one that put the emphasis on organizing sounds to organizing listening. The latter has proved a generative place from which to put into dialogue the various practices and histories shaping our long-term engagements with specific social movements, HIV/AIDS justice, housing justice, anti-racism, gender and sexual rights, education, and resistance to the war on the poor. where our experiments and organized listening occur within, alongside, or towards those movements, we call that work militant sound research. Some of the members of Ultra Red have drawn on the Argentina Political Research Collective, Colectivo Situaciones, and their work around research militancy rooted in the working class struggles of Buenos Aires. For Colectivo Situaciones, research is not merely a part of political struggle. It is the means by which militant engagement with communities and resistance gets organized. The notion of research militancy resonates deeply with historic processes of reflection on lived experience, analysis of the conditions of experience, actions that test the analysis, followed by new cycles of reflection. The production of knowledge and literacy is also the intentional process that constitutes collectivity and radical subjects. I want to mention here that several of us in Ultra Red have learned from those histories thanks to the crucial education work of the Catalyst Center in Toronto and popular education scholar Deborah Bard. More recently, within Ultra Red, we have been asking ourselves what distinguishes militant processes of engagement from what, under neoliberalism, we would call value form participation. To take the interrogation further, are there generalized conditions that reduce sound research militancy to its value form? The question causes us to become increasingly sensitive to the absence of a larger anti-systemic political movement. And here I'm speaking specifically in Los Angeles. If we understand militancy as actions that occur through institutions which organize and are organized by a movement for another world beyond monopoly finance capital, then what does the absence of that movement, or how does the absence of that movement, or does the absence of that movement constrain our research regardless of its militancy? An affirmative response to this question has become painfully obvious. For some of us in Ultra Red, the situation leads us to adjust our orientation of our investigations, which have largely contributed to isolated sites of organized resistance, such as Needle Exchange. And increasingly, the listening literacy work seeks to orient us to a horizon where the sites of that work embody a moment of cross-community militancy. This is not a political project. It is an aesthetic project, in that it is the work of survival in the wake of historic levels of poverty and approaching climate change. Thank you.